Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with KC born Boston based jazz guitarist John Stein on his brand new CD, a retrospective of the 2022 album Lifeline. It's an album that celebrates a musical career as one of the most diverse jazz guitarists of his generation, with cuts off 16 of his career albums, spanning more than 20 years from his 1999 Green Street to the most recent 2021 album Serendipity. This fall also brings a significant anniversary. In October 2021, he entered the hospital for a 2-month stay to survive an unexpected medical crisis after he contracted a rare autoimmune disease. He's now getting back to full strength, and this album is a testament to his healing and ultimate survival. Enjoy this interview.
Well, you got quite a story with your latest album, so thanks for taking a minute out to talk about it. Lifeline. I know we've kind of covered COVID and all of that, but I think what I really want to do is delve into this album, and it comes under pretty extreme health scare that you went through.
Exactly right.
Walk me through it. What exactly happened health-wise to land you in the hospital and put a scare in you?
I mean, just to be brief, just to summarize the prequel, I was a longtime teacher at Berkeley and retired in order to play music. And then first, of course, the COVID thing hit, and that derailed a bunch of my plans and gigs and so forth. And then just as COVID started to open up, not that it's gone away, of course, but started to open up and I was getting gigs. And then last year, about a year ago, almost exactly, I was stricken by this disease. And I've been healthy all my life. I mean, I'd never even heard of the disease. I don't know that much about diseases because I'd never had to learn about it. But it's a autoimmune disease called myasthenia gravis. And, you know, our immune systems are purposed to protect us from, you know, things outside of our bodies. But in some cases, our autoimmune systems get corrupted and start to attack ourselves, and that's what this disease does. It corrupts the connection between your nerves and your muscles. So if your nerves send some messages down to your muscles to fire, and the muscles don't fire, so certain muscle groups just don't work. And depending on what, it's different for different people, but depending on which muscle groups we're talking about, it can be very serious. And I was initially, when I first started to get the symptoms, it was about the spring before last year, you know. I mean, I actually went in the hospital a year ago in October, but I started seeing the symptoms with my eyesight starting in the spring before. And they were misdiagnosed, so by the time the disease was actually figured out, I was in the hospital with a crisis from this disease. And I was just very fortunate to be in the hospital because among the muscle groups that didn't work for me were my swallowing muscles, and I probably would have suffocated if I hadn't been in the hospital. They had to put a tube in my throat and keep me alive on a, you know, ventilator. And I was in the ICU for a few weeks with this tube in my throat, and that's how I survived it. And, you know, a bunch of other muscle groups were affected as well. I mean, so some were not affected at all and some were. So we just didn't know how much of me would come back after this was over. You know, when I first got in the hospital and they diagnosed the problem, which was the first I'd ever heard of the disease, the doctor told me right then, we don't know what causes this disease, but we do know how to treat it. So you should be, we expect you're going to be all right. So I kind of had that in my pocket the whole time. I didn't really think I was going to die or anything, but really I really didn't know how much of me would come back. And I couldn't talk for a while. I couldn't eat. I couldn't swallow. So they had to put a tube and feed me through a tube for And I lived that way for 6 or 8 months. And I didn't know if my eating and drinking would come back. And fortunately, it has. That would have major changed my life if those muscles hadn't come back. But of course, they have. So I can have pretty much a normal life. And I'm almost back to 100% to where I was, although not quite. Still a little weak. But I'm getting better. So I feel very fortunate.
Wow, and that was just about a year ago, this time last year.
I went into the hospital on October 8th last year, and I was there for 2 months. Well, 6 weeks in the hospital and then 2 weeks in a rehab before I came home. I came home literally on December 8th after having been either in the hospital for 6 weeks or this rehab facility. So literally it was 8 weeks out of the house, and then I got back home, and it took me all winter to get better, really, and get my strength back. And it wasn't until, I think, almost June that I started to eat and drink again a little bit. So my swallowing started to return. It was the last thing to return, was the swallowing. You know, the rest of my muscles, I lost 40 pounds. I mean, I wasn't overweight anyway, but I lost 40 pounds lying around in the hospital beds. But when you're trying to rehab yourself, you know, like I bought an exercise bike and I have some free weights, and all the muscles on the outside, you know what to do about. You know, if you do some various exercises with the free weights, your muscles are going to come back. But your swallowing muscles are, you know, in your throat and so forth, and I didn't know how to bring those back, and I wasn't doing anything about it either. And finally, my doctor said to me, John, it's time you started working on getting your swallowing back. So I had been to the hospital to have a swallowing test to see what the condition of my muscles were. And when I was there, the woman who conducted the test seemed very expert. So I actually asked her if she would give me some therapy. And she did. She agreed to do it as an outpatient. You know, I was out of the hospital by then. But the exercises were very simple, although not obvious. I guess you wouldn't have, I mean, I didn't know how to do this. But basically, I was just practicing swallowing. And as soon as I started doing that, the muscles started to come back. So anyway, I just feel very fortunate that all of the things that could have disappeared in my life are returning. You know,
wow, yeah. So while you were in the hospital, Neil Weiss from Wailing City approaches you about putting a record out. Talk to me a little bit about how all of this came about.
Well, he was the first person to visit me who wasn't family, and I had just gotten out of the ICU, and I was in what they call a step-down unit, and I couldn't talk. Or barely, you know, like because I'd had the thing in my throat for several weeks. And my breath support was disappeared. You know, it takes a lot of breath to talk and sing and whatever else. You take it for granted. But in any case, he came to visit me, and I was communicating by writing because I couldn't really talk to anybody. You couldn't understand me. And I didn't have enough breath support to really be loud enough. And my mouth and my tongue and all that, they were barely working, so I could barely articulate words. So anyway, he comes to visit me, and he said, John, I know you're planning to make a record this year, but you can't do that. So maybe as a placeholder, we'll put out a record, you know, a sort of a compilation record of some of your previous work. You got a lot of records you've already made, and just to keep things going here for you. And it was a huge gift. First of all, you know, it's very expensive to put out records, and also, so it was a financial gift, but more than that, it kept me alive, you know, the whole idea of a creative project, because I spent a lot of time lying around on hospital beds before I was even able to get home, and so the idea of, like, selecting the music for the project from my previous recordings, and programming the music in the right way so that it flowed and also was attractive to radio, because radio charting is really important to Neil and his label. So, you know, I just had this wonderful creative project to sink my teeth into while otherwise I could do nothing. So it was a mammoth gift to me. a mammoth gift to me from him. And so I'm really grateful for it. And it was really fun to do it, too, you know, to go back through all my music. And I mean, you know, I have, I think, 17 records, or maybe this one was the 17th, but a lot of music to choose from. And obviously, I could have chosen a lot of other music, but I had to try to choose music that would flow with a program and would be attractive to radio and that I was proud of. And I left a lot of stuff out, obviously, but I'm really proud of what I accomplished with this. And then also, you know, he kept saying more, like he said, get testimonials from your colleagues that you've played with. And I mean, it ended up, first of all, the art is beautiful. The person who laid it all out, the graphic artist, is a genius, because there was so much stuff in this that an average compact disc doesn't have. It has two booklets. It's got all pictures of all my previous CDs. It's got all these testimonials from a variety of musicians that I've played with over the years. It's got liner notes by Bill Nolkowski, who's a wonderful writer and very famous. And it's got liner notes from, brief liner notes from the guy that's written a bunch of my recent liner notes over the years, John Thomas, who's a Fretboard Journal editor, and also a wonderful, he's like a Renaissance man. He's an incredible lawyer. He's a professor. He's a writer of all kinds of books, some very serious, and a lot of guitar stuff. He's a crazy guitar guy, mostly acoustic guitar, but he's just a wonderful writer. And so he wrote some liner notes as well, and all of my musician friends wrote a bunch of stuff. So anyway, it's just a fabulous package, and the music is great, and it's got two discs. It's got 26 songs, 13 songs on each disc, so it's quite a package.
Yeah, that's incredible to whittle down 17 albums into 26 songs and, you know, kind of as a summary. But I keep thinking that, you know, and you've stressed how important this was. This had to be a huge lifeline, which would be the name of the album. This had to be a lifeline for you to feel motivated to get better, to want to get out of the hospital and get back to your life.
Right. And, you know, at the time that I was putting this together, I didn't know if I'd play the guitar again, frankly. I mean, I had just come home from the hospital, and my wife brought my guitars down, and I almost wept at the beauty of looking at these instruments, which I hadn't seen for 2 months. And she put one on my lap, and I couldn't play, you know. So, you know, my hands didn't work. I could barely even had the strength to hold it in my lap. So, I mean, I kind of knew it was going to come back, but I didn't know for sure to what extent it would come back. And it took quite a bit of time for me to get my skill back on the guitar. And, you know, but, I mean, I never really thought I wasn't going to be able to play. I sort of, because the doctor had told me right at the beginning, you have myasthenia gravis, we don't know what causes it, but we know how to treat it. You're going to be all right. So I had that in my pocket. I kind of knew that if I stuck with it, it was going to come back. But there were no guarantees. And when I wrote my part of the liner notes, you know, I had just gotten home, and I was just learning to play the guitar again. And, you know, that's what's in the, if you read my part of the liner notes, that's the way it sounds. So, I mean, you know, it's just been quite a process. And this, and Lifeline, you know, I think a Lifeline is the name of the product that, I mean, of course, now people's Apple Watches do this, but it used to be some kind of device that, you know, someone living alone, an older person whose family was concerned about them living alone, you wear it around your neck, and if you fall down, you can press the button, and it calls the emergency for you. You know, I think that's the name of the product. In fact, Bill Nolkowski, the guy who wrote the liner notes, suggested the title, and both Neil and I loved the idea, so that's how it ended up being called Lifeline. But have you heard the record, Joe?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In fact, okay. I have a subscription to Apple Music, so I have it on my phone, and I love listening to it while I drive around, and it just, there's such a great continuity of what's going on. I always like your playing. I always like the way that you put it out there. It's good music to just kind of contemplate and watch the world go by. I mean, there's certain albums that are really, really good for that, for driving around and looking at the world, and I've really enjoyed listening to this.
Oh, that's really great to hear that. I mean, for me, it was I'm a little tired of it by now, to be honest, but for many months, it was my soundtrack all through creating it, getting it all organized and collecting all the liner notes and everything else. I was listening to it incessantly. Also, you know, is this really the right order for the songs? You know, you obsess about stuff when you're putting a project like that together, or at least I do. So, you know, it was something that my poor wife got really sick of hearing because I was playing it like 24 hours a day. And also I was having trouble sleeping and I was wearing headphones and I was listening to it in bed even, you know, so I just never stopped listening to it for several months, which fortunately I've tired of it now and I moved on to other things, you know. But
as you should, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of the way it is with me anyway. When I do a recording, it's like I'm obsessed about it until I get tired of it, and then I let it go. And then sometimes don't listen to it again for years. I mean, that's the interesting thing about going through all this music is that, you know, literally, I think Lifeline was my 17th release, which means there are 16 previous ones, and if my numbers are right, I sort of lose track. But at any rate, that's the gist. But there's a lot of that music I hadn't heard in a long time, and I had to go back through all of it deciding which of the tunes to actually include. And Neil was very generous, Neil Weiss, because most of those recordings are on his label, but not all of them. My first five records were on different labels, and he said, look, you know, you can put something from every record, even the ones that aren't on Wailing City, on this. The only one I didn't include music from was my very first album called Hustle Up. And I thought about it. There was one or two songs on that I could have, but I felt like that record was my very first recording, and it kind of was like my graduate school project. In other words, I had gotten an education, and I was an advanced student, and I was doing really well in school and all that. And so I put this nice recording together. But at that point, I hadn't really been gigging. I hadn't really been playing with people a lot. So to me, it sounds more like an advanced student project overall, even though there's a lot of nice music on it. So I chose not to add anything from that record. But all my other albums, that means four other albums before I met Neil, I have one song at least. Yeah, one song off of all of those. And then I tried to put a couple of songs from all of Neil's, the records on his label. So, and it ended up being not exactly that way, but that's pretty much how it worked out. So there's, except for my first album, at least one song from every one of my recordings, and a couple of them have three songs, and a couple of the other ones only have one song, but it's basically a couple songs off of each of my other records that are on his label. So that's the story of how I picked it, the songs, but it was very interesting to go back through all that music, because some of it I hadn't heard in years, because I don't sit there, I don't listen to my music incessantly. So I really hadn't listened to some of it in a long time. It was fun.
Yeah, I would imagine, especially under the circumstances of coming home and, you know, getting healthy. And I'm curious, you know, we're a day shy of the one-year anniversary. Are you going to observe this? Is this a big deal that you're back to strength and things are getting back to normal?
No, because I'm still getting back to normal. I'm not normal yet. 100%. You know, I'm still a little weak. I still have some funny things with my eyes. Here's an interesting story. You know, by the end of August, I was feeling pretty close to normal, and there was an opportunity. I was actually supposed to do this in June, but for a variety of reasons, it didn't work out. But there's a new drug for myasthenia gravis that I decided that even though I almost don't need it, I thought I would try it, thinking that it would kick the final symptoms to the curb, these little issues with my eyes and so forth. And it's an infusion. The infusion is supposed to be once a week for 4 weeks, and then see how it goes. If you need more, you can do it again 5 or 6 weeks later. I decided to try it. It's a new drug that's out. It's had really good results. Sometimes I see advertisements for it on the cable news stations. It's called Vyvgart. Anyway, I decided to try it. And I go in, I get the first infusion, and 2 days later, the only side effects, none of them are particularly serious apparently, the only side effects is that they make you perhaps more susceptible to get, what's the word I'm looking for, to get sick from things. I forget what the word is I'm looking for. But anyway, I get this infusion, and 2 days later, I got fucking pneumonia. And back in the hospital for a week, I lost 10 of the pounds that I had gained back. And I was back in a hole. Now, relatively speaking, it was a very small hole compared to the hole I had already dragged myself out of with the myasthenia gravis. But, you know, it was still like, it put me back. And now I'm just about back to where I was before I got the pneumonia. And so, obviously, I'm not continuing with these infusions. I'm going to get better without them. And right now, my only issues are not so much from the myasthenia gravis, although there's a few remaining little issues with that, but... some of the treatment for the myasthenia gravis is other medicines, like I'm on a steroid called prednisone, which I was on 60 milligrams a day of this. These details are not very interesting, so I don't know if you want me to continue with this, but I'll just briefly tell you. And prednisone and steroids do all these other weird side effects, and they're horrible, and we're really trying to get off the prednisone. So we've been lowering the prednisone every month, and I'm right now at 10, and in a couple of days I'll be down to 7.5 milligrams from 60. I was at 60 a day for months. So we're trying to get myself down to the lowest level of the prednisone, because one of the things is, I don't have any of the booster shots for COVID, for example. I got one of them in January, but we have no idea if it protected me in any way, because the prednisone is a thing that reduces your immunity. So I'm trying to get low enough on the prednisone that I can get the booster shots and the flu shot and all the other stuff that people are supposed to get right now to protect themselves. And until that happens, until I know that I'm protected as much as anybody else who would get a booster, I have to be very cautious not to get COVID, which is, you know, it changes the way you live your life. You know, I have to wear a mask all the time when I'm around people, and it's prevented me from visiting even my family and my grandchildren because they're sick, so I can't be around them. You know, so it's kind of isolated me. I'm not entirely isolated, but once I'm low enough on these steroids to get these shots, I can really begin to resume close to my normal life. And I'm not sure exactly when that's going to happen, but I'm getting very close to that time. And I'm really looking forward to that because, for example, I'm starting to gig again. I have a big gig 4th of November at the Jazz Club here in Boston, Scullers. And the guy that booked me into that, if it's a successful gig and we bring in an audience, thinks he can book me up and down the coast, at least, in the major rooms. And which is why I retired from Berkeley right before COVID to begin with, so that I could do stuff like that. So once I get these shots, I'm going to feel very free to be able to do some of this. And so I'm still on pause a little bit because of fear of getting COVID, because I have no idea what COVID would do to me. I mean, it's bad enough that I'm recovering from this myasthenia gravis. The last thing I need is to catch COVID, you know, or even a cold.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I'm susceptible to the flu and everything else. Everything right now, my immune system is lowered because of the steroids. So just trying to get off the steroids so that I can get those shots and really begin to resume more of my normal life. And this is a boring story for me now because I've been living with it for so long, so I don't want to overdo it, but, you know, I just thought I'd tell you what's going on with that.
Yeah.
And maybe there's something more interesting to talk about now. I don't know.
Yeah, no, this is wonderful, and I didn't realize the depth of it, so I'm glad you've elaborated. And I have one more question for you, and it's this. What are you ultimately hoping the listener gets from this album, Lifeline?
It's an exposure to what I've done in my career. You know, there's a lot of variety on this, huge variety, you know. It's from duets to larger groups and wonderful musicianship from everyone involved. You know, all of the sidemen just absolutely contribute so much to all of my albums. They always have. I'm a very democratic band leader. And, you know, and I don't impose. I'm open to people's ideas. And, I mean, I can't tell you how much benefit I've gotten from listening to my sidemen suggestions and taking their suggestions in many cases. I mean, in fact, you know, I put myself, I almost always feel this way. I mean, not always, but nearly always when I'm with really great musicians in a recording situation, you know, and I'm changing my concept based on their concepts. I'm allowing their ideas to affect what goes on, and I feel like, oh, I'm taking a chance here because this isn't exactly the way I practiced it, and I'm not exactly prepared for this ahead of time. I just got to see what happens because we're changing stuff on the fly in the studio. And so, I mean, really, I listen to this music and I hear the brilliance of all of my collaborators. And in some cases, I feel like I'm hanging on for dear life, to be honest with you, because they're such great musicians. But it always seems to work out that I have enough that I'm really proud of to put out on a record when I try to make a recording. And you know, this is kind of like, I mean, I could have chosen a lot of other music, but in some ways this is the creme de la creme of my recording. It's like the one or two songs off of each album that I'm most proud of, sort of. Although, as I said, there was plenty of other music I could have chosen, and things like, oh, major versus minor, or tempos, or whatever. I wanted to make a nice flowing program. So, and also, I was running out of time. You can only fit so much, so many minutes on a disc. I think it's about 72, and then you start to run the risk of it not coming out so well if you put more. So for time constraints and tempo changes and all that, these are the songs I happen to select, but it is like the creme de la creme of John Stein's previously recorded music. And so I just, if somebody wants to know what I sound like, this is a good way to do it because it's just really nice music. And, you know, I'm looking forward to, the fact is I was getting ready to record another album when I got sick. And that repertoire is getting old to me now because it's now a year later. I've been using it in the few concerts I've had, and the one that's coming up, we're doing all of this repertoire that as soon as the concert is over and I can afford it, I'm going to take this band into the studio and record it and put that out. And then fortunately, I'm a little tired of the music because I've been doing it now for a year. I expected to record it a year ago. So I'm looking forward to actually accomplishing it so that I can move on to another batch of tunes, because this one I've lived with a little bit longer than I hoped. But it is great music and I'm excited about it. So that'll be the next thing that comes out, I hope, if I'm lucky. That's my plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, John, man, it's great to catch up with you. I'm so glad that things are getting better. Stay safe and well out there, and I look forward to playing it on the show.
Really appreciate, Joe. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Boston, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to John for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends. I want to tip you off to a wonderful program I found out about. As we expand our reach, we have made some friends out there in the world that love jazz as much as we do. This program is fully endorsed by Neon Jazz.
Gerald Albright, Rhea Schneider, Charlie Hunter, Duke Robillard, Sean Jones, Walter Beasley, Steve Swallow. Something Came from Baltimore is a jazz, blues, and R&B podcast and radio show, and it's not really about Baltimore. Subscribe to the podcast and listen to your favorite artist or future favorite artist. That's Something Came from Baltimore. And be a part of that Be More Music scene. Joe Lovano, Jeff Kaufman, Paula Cole, Danuzo Makatani, Ann Passio, Chess Smith, Thumbscrew.
Neon Jazz.